What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Monday, June 8th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as shortstop J.P. Crawford was placed on the 10-day IL with a hand contusion. I'd assume, given the insevere nature of this injury, that Crawford will be back in the minimum time. But during Crawford's absence, Colt Emerson will handle everyday shortstop duties for the Mariners, while Patrick Wisdom mans the hot corner. Second baseman Ryan Bliss was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. Next, the Angels placed a pair of second basemen on the IL, with Vaughn Grissom landing on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain and Adam Frazier hitting the 10-day IL with elbow inflammation. Grissom was just heating up amid a post-hype breakout and now will miss anywhere between 2 and 6 weeks, which sucks for both the Angels and Grissom, as I was really prepared for him to ascend over the next month. While Adam Frazier has been in more of a bench role after starting out in a strong side of a platoon at second base, now he's more likely to miss a couple of weeks, but when he returns, it's not like he's going to have a huge impact in fantasy or for the Angels. But in corresponding moves, we have a couple of new faces. First baseman Trey Mancini is not a new face to the league, but he is to the Angels. His contract was selected from the minors. He hasn't played in the majors since 2023. Mancini will be on the short side of a first base platoon with Nolan Schanuel, while seeing time at DH with Jorge Soler on the IL. And the other one is shortstop Denzer Guzman, who was recalled from the minors. He's the Angels' number 7 prospect. And while this isn't his MLB debut, he had a cup of coffee last year. He is looking like a much different player this year. Guzman has made huge strides in the strikeout department at AAA this year, dropping his strikeout rate down to 18%, leading to a 336 average, 12 homers, 9 steals, and a 136 WRC plus as a 22-year-old at AAA. And Guzman will man third base full-time, with Yoan Moncada being transferred to the 60-day IL with knee inflammation, which means that Guzman could have a pretty long leash at the hot corner. He's definitely somebody to consider immediately in 15-team leagues and deeper. Next, shortstop Nick Allen was placed on the 10-day IL with a hamstring strain. Shea Whitcomb was recalled from the minors and will replace Allen as the Astros' backup utility infielder. And lastly, starting pitcher Chris Bassett was placed on the 15-day IL with a low back discomfort. Bassett likely won't miss more than the minimum time, but if he does, starting pitcher Trey Gibson will hold down his spot in the rotation. He was recalled for the minors to start yesterday versus the Mariners, tossing 4 2/3 innings, allowing 5 hits, 3 earned runs, and 1 walk, while striking out nobody, inducing 7 whiffs with 27% CSW across 68 pitches. And Gibson will stick in the rotation and face the Padres next, though, after striking out nobody in this start. It's not a start that I'll be targeting. In terms of transactions, outfielder Austin Slater was selected from the minors. He's on the Rays now. He'll be on the short side of a left field platoon for Tampa, as shortstop Oliver Dunn was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Next, third baseman Max Muncy was activated from the 10-day IL after missing over a month with a fractured hand. He was off to a great start to the season, but then was dealing with the symptoms of that fractured hand, and his performance really cratered after that. I think he's going to get back to somewhere in between his first couple of weeks and his second couple of weeks. And Muncy will be the everyday third baseman moving forward and could see time at shortstop with Jacob Wilson on the IL, but maybe it's Zach Geloff who shifts to shortstop against right-handed pitchers, as all those guys are going to be competing for playing time at third base, shortstop, and second base with Jeff McNeil and Alika Williams. I think it's going to be Williams at short, Geloff at second, and Muncy at third versus lefties. And then versus righties, I think it'll be McNeil at second, either Geloff or Muncy at third base and shortstop. Shortstop Daryl Hernaiz was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. In terms of news, starting pitcher Dylan Cease is expected to be activated from the 15-day IL to start today versus the Phillies. He's missed a couple of weeks with a hamstring strain. The Blue Jays will also return Max Scherzer to the active roster, as he's expected to be activated from the 15-day IL to start tomorrow versus the Phillies as well. He's been out for over a month with forearm tendonitis and ankle inflammation. That's Max Scherzer. Next, outfielder Nathan Church is expected to be activated from the 10-day IL today. He has missed a couple of of weeks with a shoulder strain, and he will be on the strong side of some sort of platoon in the corner outfield for the Cardinals as outfielder. Victor Scott II is expected to be optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. And lastly, Matt Shaw is expected to be activated from the 10-day IL today after missing 3 weeks with mid-back tightness. Shaw will return to being a super utility player for the Cubs, finding playing time in the infield and the outfield, mostly against left-handed pitchers, while outfielder Kevin Alcantara is expected to be optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Monday, a day in which we had just 8 games on our slate. We'll start it off with our hitters, and this is just going to be a showcase of what the ballpark in Las Vegas can do for the A's. They're playing there at the AAA stadium that the Aviators usually inhabit, and the ball was just flying as the A's and Brewers combined for 9 home runs in this game. I don't know if this is an indicator of what that's going to look like when the A's officially move to Vegas full time, because they're likely to play in some sort of domed stadium to keep fans and players away from the heat. But because there is a very high level of elevation in Vegas that's likely to affect the flight of the ball dramatically, while it's not as high as Colorado, it would be the second highest stadium above the Diamondbacks Stadium, Chase Field. So right now, we're getting a pretty good appetizer for what it's going to be like when batters are playing in Vegas full-time. And first baseman Nick Kurtz was the first guy we're going to talk about who took advantage of the thin air of Vegas, as the A's lost to the Brewers in 12 innings, but Kurtz went 3-for-6 with 3 runs, 2 home runs, 3 runs batted in, and a walk. He's up to 14 home runs on the year now. First one went 374 feet at 97 miles per hour, and the second one 447 feet at 110 miles per hour, an absolute bomb from Nick Kurtz. He started off relatively slowly, and I think that's because pitchers, rightly so, were afraid to attack him. They were throwing him a lot of balls, and ultimately that led to one of the longest walk streaks ever, one of the longest on-base streaks of all time, as Kurtz leaned into his passiveness and just said, hey, you're going to have to come to me. I'm just going to walk every single time. Now pitchers are being forced to come to him, and he's absolutely blasting the ball. He's got his OPS up to 955, which is third in baseball. 955 OPS from Nick Kurtz. He's also tied for the MLB lead with 61 walks, tied with Mike Trout, so that patience is paying off. It's also led to an MLB leading 434 on base percentage. So after a slow start, Nick Kurtz has gotten right back to looking like one of the premier bats in all of baseball. His teammate outfielder Tyler Soderstrom did all he could, but the A's lost to the Brewers. He went 3-for-4 with 2 runs, 2 home runs of his own, 4 RBIs, and 2 walks for good measure. He's up to 10 homers on the year now. The first one traveled 434 feet at 104 miles per hour, and the second one 418 feet at 99 miles per hour. Soderstrom has underperformed this year, entering this game with an OPS under 750, but after this huge performance, it's now pushing 800 as he's looking to get back on track. The downturn in Soderstrom's performance has been mostly luck-based due to a 256 BABIP that rose after this start, but he's still hitting the ball as hard and barreling it as much as he did last year. But there have been some inconsistencies apparent in a reduced hard hit rate, an increased fly ball rate, and massively increased pop-up rate, suggesting Soderstrom's point of contact has been off, leading to inconsistent exit velocities and easy outs in the air. Soderstrom has displayed potential for a higher ceiling if he can lock in that sweet spot, though, as he's improved his plate discipline and contact ability, walking more than ever, striking out at a career low rate, and boosting his zone contact rate to 90%. Soderstrom is a great buy low at the moment, especially as the California weather heats up. That BABIP should rise. I think the plate discipline and contact rate will lead to better contact, better quality of contact moving forward as we see that pop-up rate start to dwindle. And lastly, first baseman Andrew Vaughn helped the Brewers to win in Vegas, going 3-for-6 with a run, 2 doubles, a home run, and 4 runs batted in. It was his second homer of the year, and it traveled 420 feet at 101 miles per hour. Vaughn took advantage of the ideal offensive conditions in Vegas, as he was one of a number of players to belt 9 home runs in Nevada. Vaughn was a key contributor for the Brewers last year after being acquired from the White Sox, batting 308 with 9 homers and a 142 WRC plus in 64 games. And he was lined up for a full season breakout this year before fracturing his hamate bone in the first week of the season, requiring surgery that kept him out for over a month. Since Vaughn's return, he's gotten back on track offensively with an impressive 974 OPS and a 364 batting average on the season, but he's not been awarded rewarded the playing time he had before. Jake Bowers locked himself into the first base position while Vaughn was recovering and hasn't slowed down offensively, locking him into the lineup versus righties, while Christian Yelich hogs the designated hitter role, and the current outfield alignment is superior defensively to the possibility of a position change for Bowers, who has experience playing in the outfield. This has Vaughn locked into the short side of a platoon at first base, making him basically obsolete in fantasy in every league except for daily move leagues, where he can be streamed against left-handed pitchers. If Vaughn gets an everyday role, if one opens up, I'm all in to get him everywhere, but for now we have to ignore him because he doesn't play enough. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Monday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Christopher Sanchez, who helped the Phillies to win in Toronto. I mention him every single time he has a start, and that's not because I mention, you know, just any pitcher that I like. That's because he's always earning awards, or he's always doing something notable enough to be mentioned in this podcast, where I barely even get through two pitchers in some podcasts. So Sanchez was great again. 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 10 strikeouts with 17 whiffs, 31% CSW, and 107 pitches. He earned the gallows pole by leading baseball with those 17 whiffs. He also leads MLB with 93 and a third innings pitched. He's second in MLB with 8 wins, a 1.54 ERA, and 113 strikeouts. So Sanchez is the front runner for the NL Cy Young Award, though. It's going to be a tough battle between him and Jacob Mizorowski. Next, Logan Webb did all he could, but the Giants lost to the Nationals. He tossed 8 innings, allowing 5 hits and 1 earned run, walking nobody while striking out 7, inducing 11 whiffs with 33% CSW across 99 pitches, and he earned the King Cole by leading baseball with that 33% CSW. This was his first start of more than 7 innings pitched on the year, and Webb tied his season high with 7 strikeouts, and he's looked much better since returning from the injured list, mastering the feel for his changeups while thriving in the zone with sinkers, stealing strikes, and inducing ground balls. Start Webb freely versus the Cubs up next. And lastly, we have Ian Seymour, who helped the Rays to win against the Red Sox, tossing 4 innings, allowing 1 hit and 1 run, walking one while striking out 5. He induced 9 whiffs with 38% CSW across 55 pitches. And with Steven Matz transitioning to the bullpen and the Rays in dire need of starters, Seymour is getting a shot to return to the rotation after being a solid swatch last year and thriving in a relief role this year. In his first semi-true start of the year, he was an opener previously, and this one really wasn't a full start as he only went 55 pitches, but Seymour looked incredible, earning A grades across the board on his pitcherless stats player card. He kept changeups down and 4 seamers with 18 to 19 inches of vert upstairs while finding the zone constantly with sweepers. Those sweepers need to be located better, as he definitely hung a few and got away with those. And I'd greatly prefer that he throw the cutter we saw last year to right-handed batters and save the sweeper and sinker for left-handed batters. But there's certainly potential for Seymour to become a fantasy-relevant swatch like he was last year. Remember that he pitched to a 3.63 ERA with a 26% strikeout rate in 2025. If the Rays go with a 6-man rotation or replace Mason Englert with Seymour, he would get the Angels or Dodgers next, one or the other, dependent on whether or not Englert stays in the rotation. So there's really no need to chase him right now either way, as he's still getting stretched out with just 55 pitches in this outing. But Seymour is definitely someone to keep an eye on based on the grades that he earned on his pitcherless stats player card. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Monday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves, starting with the former. Andrés Muñoz recorded his 10th save with a hitless ninth. Brian Baker pitched a scoreless ninth for his 17th save. Yoan Duran recorded his 16th save with a scoreless ninth. Brian Abreu pitched a scoreless 10th for his 4th save as Josh Hader struck out the side in order in the ninth to earn his first win. Gus Varland pitched a scoreless 9th for his 5th save. Clayton Beter allowed 2 runs while recording 4 outs across the 7th and 8th to earn his 2nd win. So seems to be a co-closer situation for the Nationals. And lastly, Chad Patrick pitched a hitless 12th for his 3rd save. And in terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Cade Smith recorded 5 outs across the 8th and the 9th in a tie game. The Guardians would go on to lose in 10 innings. David Bednar recorded 5 outs across the 9th and 10th to earn his second win. Kirby Yates allowed a run in the 9th to blow his second save, and the Angels would go on to lose in 10 innings. Mason Miller struck out the side in order, pitching the 9th up by 4 after the Padres tacked on 3 insurance runs in the 8th. Keaton Wynn allowed 3 runs in the 9th to blow his first save and take his second loss. And lastly, Hogan Harris allowed 2 runs while attempting a 5-out save to blow his second save of the year. The A's would lose this game in 12 innings in Vegas. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com. And before I look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Tuesday, June 9th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Zach Wheeler versus Dylan Cease. Cease is returning from the IL, and Wheeler is returning to his ace form. In terms of probable starters, we've got 8 guys in the auto starts tier, including Wheeler. We've also got Paul Skenes versus the Dodgers, Chase Burns in San Diego, and Nathan Eovaldi in Kansas City. We've got 2 guys in our probably starts tier and 8 in our questionable starts tier, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Dustin May. In Queens, May has looked much better recently, finding a strikeout ceiling he previously didn't have with the floor of his ability to get tons of ground balls with his heavy high velo sinker and his ability to reduce damage with his command. I think May is somebody that needs to be rostered everywhere, and this is a clear start for me in Queens. I'd also keep an eye out for Walbert Urania versus the Astros. Urania with his heavy changeup approach and his high velo fastballs, as well as the emergence of his sweeper, has been a guy that's been super trustworthy recently. He's allowed 3 runs or less in the majority of his starts, and I think it's a pretty clear start for him versus the Astros. In terms of hitter suggestions, our target Nationals hitters versus Adrian Hauser in Oracle Park, because Hauser has a 5.49 ERA. I'd also target Pirates hitters versus Eric Lauer in PNC Park, because Lauer has a 5.74 ERA. I'd target Cubs and Rockies hitters in Coors Field, because it's Coors. We'll see Colin Ray versus Tomoyuki Sugano in that one. And lastly, I target Brewers and A's hitters in the Las Vegas ballpark, and we'll see Robert Gasser versus JT Ginn in that one. And if it's anything like Monday's outing, it's going to be a slugfest once again in Las Vegas. And now we can close things out with our relievers to watch. Hogan Harris and Mark Leiter Jr. have pitched on back-to-back days, so one of Scott Barlow or Justin Sterner should be the go-to option in the 9th for the A's. David Bednar has pitched on back-to-back days, so expect Fernando Cruz to be the interim closer for the time being. Andres Munoz has pitched on back-to-back days, so Matt Brash or Jose Ferrer should be the top option for a save in the Mariners bullpen. Mason Miller has pitched in 3 of the past 4 days, so if the Padres want to give him a day off, Jason Adam or Adrian Morahone will be your best bets at a save. And lastly, Keaton Wynn has pitched 3 days in a row, so look for Caleb Killian or Eric Miller to get a shot at a save for the Giants on Tuesday. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler, where I do daily SP streamers and I break down every single start via the Pitcher List stats player cards. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast, and make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.